1, 2, 3.
Welcome to Three Song Stories, the show that has stumbled across the fact that asking people to dip into their memories to find songs that are indelibly linked to moments in their lives turns them into their own best storytellers. Thanks for listening. I'm Mike Canary. Our guest this week is Rada Angelova. Rada is known for her work in theater in New York City. She started as the actor, writer, and producer of her own solo show that was presented at the Midtown International Theater Festival, and then she stepped behind the curtain to represent some of the world's longest-running musicals, including Chicago and Cats, while they were on tour in the U.S. Rada is originally from Bulgaria, where she says she first found her passion for music. Today she co-writes with songwriters from Nashville, Canada, North Macedonia, and others. Her songs Anonymous in New York and Margarita are among her most popular and can be found under her music artist name Rada and Subject to Change. Inspired by her experience in the Big Apple, Rada created a career development class introducing creatives and producers from Eastern Europe to the theater world on Broadway and beyond called This Is My Show. Rada comes our way via episode number 253, guest, New York City-based Bulgarian-American actress, filmmaker, model, fire dancer, teacher, and more, Evgenia Radulova. We caught up with Rada remotely from her home in Bulgaria. Hey there, Rada, how are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for doing this from, you know, almost literally the other side of the world. Where in Bulgaria are you?
I'm in our capital, which is called Sofia.
Can you describe where Bulgaria is on the map, on the globe, for our geographically challenged listeners?
Sure. It's in Southeast Europe. So I imagine that many people have been to Greece. We border Greece and Turkey on the south and Romania on the north, Serbia and North Macedonia on the west. So that should give you an idea. And also the Black Sea on the east.
So you're roughly the same latitude as about like New York or the northeastern United States. So what's the weather like there today?
It's really warm. It's like 20 degrees Celsius, which is almost like, it almost feels like summer. And in terms of Fahrenheit, gosh, after living in the U.S. for so many years, I still have trouble converting Celsius to Fahrenheit. So it's just a really nice spring day.
I looked up what the temperature was right before we started, and it's 71 degrees Fahrenheit.
There you go.
Okay, so let's get to the music stuff. So what's your earliest musical memory, if you had to flashback, something that stuck with you?
Well, it would have to be the music that my parents listened to at home, and that was a good mix of the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, Queen, and some Bulgarian artists, popular Bulgarian artists at the time. But it would be like rock and roll, English, and yeah, mainly British rock and roll.
Do you have brothers or sisters?
I do. I have an older sister.
Did she influence you musically? Was she listening to what your parents were listening to or something else?
She is actually 9 years older than me, so I wouldn't say that she influenced me musically, no.
Oh, so she was, there's a little bit too much gap there.
Yeah.
Were your parents playing records? I'm trying to figure out, was that a records era or had we moved past records yet?
It was a cassette tape era. Here in Bulgaria, at least.
During that time, was that kind of music cool to play? I know that, you know, you were living in under the Soviet Union, so there were some restrictions on Western art, as I understand it.
Yeah, but you're right. When I was growing up, we still were under communist rule, but I was so young, I didn't really understand fully what was going on, and I just know that in my high household, this was the kind of music we listened to, and it was allowed, and I really loved it.
How would you describe the musical background of your childhood, you know, beyond just the walls of your home and what your parents were listening to? Did you see shows or music out in the world? You know, were you listening to the radio beyond what they had?
Now I'm going a few years later when I was already a teenager and young adult, if you will. We were introduced to, there was a lot of music here. I think it was really versatile. Later on, when I started forming my musical taste, you know, being influenced by my friends, I listened to a lot of hard rock, a lot of American rock. Then I went into electronic music. It was like really, really diverse. So I would say that, and this is already post 89 when communism fell. So we were flooded here with all kinds of music, and we were very, very curious in terms of these foreign sounds.
Do you remember the first music that you owned that you could hold in your hand?
Oh my gosh, it would have to be between a cassette tape, a tape of Nirvana or Guns N' Roses, because these were like two of my favorite groups. I was crazy about buying music, buying cassette tapes, and it would have to be one of those two, but I can't remember which one it was.
Were you able to speak any English at that time in your life? Were you listening to these songs knowing what they were talking about?
No, I really didn't understand the lyrics. And, you know, alternative rock and rock and roll, these are so, it's such emotional music. You kind of are led by the emotion. And especially as a foreigner, you don't really understand the lyrics fully. So even though I have to say I fell in love with the English language just by listening to those first records at home I was telling you about, you know, the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, I just fell in love with the English language. And I did start learning it, but I didn't understand it to the point of understanding the lyrics of the songs. I mean, I would understand here and there, but not fully.
It must be an interesting experience to have, you know, like something like Guns N' Roses, that you really just love that album. And then over time, you learn enough English that suddenly there's a transition to like listening to the words.
Absolutely. I mean, if I listened to all of those albums today, I would listen to them with like brand new ears, because I would understand so much more in terms of the lyrics. It would be like hearing them all over again for the first time.
Did you ever make mixtapes?
Yes, I did.
What would be on your mixtapes? Would they be for you, or would they be for some, some boy you wanted to impress?
No, I couldn't be bothered with boys in high school. Oh my gosh, it must have been like, I don't even remember. I mean, my influences were, I was also listening to classical music, so it's very possible that I was mixing, you know, Beethoven with heavy metal on my mixtapes. It's just like, and there was a lot, cassette tapes were expensive, and that was the reasoning behind making those mixtapes at the time. You would borrow a tape or two from a friend, and you'd go home and you'd use your cassette tape player to transfer over something to a tape that you didn't have to pay for. So I guess it wasn't good for the artist, but we did what we could to like get our hands on some fresh music.
Absolutely. It was revolutionary to be able to like put together your own playlist. Kids these days have it so easy with their playlists. Okay. Before we get to your first song, do you remember the first time you saw music performed live that wasn't some sort of like a choir, but like a concert?
Yes, I do. It actually leads into my first song, because that was a concert that my parents took me to. It's a Bulgarian artist called Vasil Naidenov, and my parents took me to his live concert in close to where I grew up.
Well, should we listen to the song, or do you want to talk about the story that goes with the song first?
Well, let's say, sure, let's dive into the song. It is called Julie, and it's actually a Bulgarian cover version of a song called Oh Julie by Shaking Stevens. And the artist who performs the Bulgarian version is called Vasil Naidenov. And this song brings me back to early childhood. Kind of my memories are pretty blurred, but I was dancing in our living room secretly, supposedly secretly, because I do like, you know, I was shy. I'm dancing to this song like wildly. And then at some point I realized my father is peeking in from the door, which had this kind of like a smoky mirror, not mirror, but window. And so the minute I see his silhouette, I'm like startled. I get all shy and I try to like chase him away so I can continue my activity. And I think that he really realized that I was quite musical at that time, and then insisted that I take piano lessons, and I kind of develop that musicality. So let's listen to it.
All right, this is Rada Angelova's first song today. This is, like she said, Julie. The artist is Vasil Naidenov?
That's right.
All right, and like she said, it's based on the song Oh Julie by Shakin' Stevens.
Oh my God, I was just back in that living room, and then at the same time here now, and just still grooving to it. It's just such a great song. It's really great. Thank you for bringing me back to it. I really haven't listened to it in a long time. And I have to tell you, I realized this is a cover version just recently. I thought that this is his original song. And one day I was sitting in the car here in Bulgaria and they put on the original and I was like, what?
Oh, so you didn't realize it was based on that other song Oh, wow. That must have blown your mind.
It really blew my mind.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go on a little nerd tangent here. So I Googled it and I found, ready for this? So I found an academic paper titled Restrictive Remix, Political Censorship on Western Music in Communist Bulgaria in the 1960s through the 1980s.
Whoa.
And it was published in 2013 by someone at the St. Cyril and St. Methodius University of Veliko Tarnovo in Bulgaria. Are you familiar with that? And it cites this song as one of the songs that was created under what they called restrictive remixes, where the artist would use a Western song but then change the words in order to get it by censorship. So this song was one of the songs that paper cited as one that did that. Had you any idea that was a thing?
I did not, but I did notice that the lyrics are different. The instrumental is incredibly close to the original, but the words are not. Huh. So it must have been a thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway.
I would be curious. You have to send me a link to that paper.
Yeah, I will. You'll probably recognize some of it. It wasn't the only one it cited. So you mentioned piano. You said your dad saw you dancing and picked up on your musicality. So then you became serious about piano?
He wanted me to become serious about piano. I did not. they did buy me a real piano. It was a Tchaikovsky, and we lived on the fifth floor, so it must have been a whole ordeal to get it up there, and it must have also been expensive. They signed me up for lessons, but it was not my thing because it required me to sit still for hours and practice. And I did not like that. I liked being outside and running around with my friends. But I wish I had learned. I wish I had stuck with it a little longer, because having a better knowledge of piano really helps when you compose songs, which is something I started doing much later.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Did you play any other instruments, or was your brief attempt at piano it?
That was it.
So, in high school, like, where did you fit in? Were you, you mentioned before that you were shy. Were you a theater kid, or like, where did you fit in high school?
I was somewhere in between the nerds and the artists. I had different groups of friends that were very different from each other. And I somehow was very interested in what everybody was doing. I had this one group that was very book smart, very academic. And then I had another group that were artists, painters mainly. And then I myself became a singer, just I guess going back to your question about another instrument. I did not play another instrument, but I started singing. That was an influence from my sister because she was singing in this choir in town that was really popular. And then I guess I was somewhat influenced by her to go and audition for this choir. And that was a big thing for me, singing in that choir, because we toured all over Europe. And in a time when it was difficult to do that, you know, it wasn't like today, you just go. Back then, you couldn't travel so easily. So it was a really big thing for me. So that was a big influence.
Do you remember when you were doing that traveling, the first place that really made you go, wow, the world's got a lot more stuff in it than I might have thought?
Well, oh God, I'd have to look on a map, but just for accuracy. But you know, the minute you stepped into more like Central Europe, maybe somewhere around Austria, it was just a different world. We were traveling. We were traveling. Let's see, from Bulgaria, we went on tour. We had concerts in like Venice and in Strasbourg, in Vienna, in Barcelona. So we were really all over the map. And we were traveling by train and by bus. And so, the minute you left like Eastern Europe, it was a different world. It really was. And so I was really inspired and impressed by that. And that influenced me actually to see more of the world. So when it came time to for me to apply for college, I knew that I wanted to study abroad, and I decided to that I wanted to go to the US. I only applied for schools in the US, colleges in the US, because I knew that I couldn't get any financial support in Western Europe, so I didn't even try there.
Well, we'll get to college in a little bit, but let me do a little more high school. High school dances. Do you have any high school dance memories?
Oh yeah, tons.
What would have been the big songs playing during that era? What popped into your head?
Well, I remember a lot of I had a very strong rock period, I guess, and it was popular to go to house parties and also to concerts of local bands. And the dance at a rock concert is headbanging, right? So there was a lot of that. And then after I got over that phase, I don't even know that I got over it because I still appreciate that music very much. But then I had a phase of electronic music, and there was a massive movement in Bulgaria, which still exists. It was a group of DJs that were very progressive, and they were keeping an eye on the latest electronic offerings from abroad. They were organizing these massive parties called Metropolis. So the dance there is, I mean, it's kind of like what you make it. Anything goes.
What did you want to be when you grew up during that time? Did you have a sights, you know, do you have sights set? You know, you say you wound up wanting to come to the United States, but like, what was your goal at that point?
My goal was to come to the United States, and then I did not I did not know what I wanted to do professionally growing up, and I allowed myself to experience each year as it came, and I didn't really feel too pressured that I didn't really know yet. And actually, I think it was a really good choice for me that I decided to come to the United States. I graduated from a liberal arts college, and then by the end of that, I knew what I wanted to do. But here in Bulgaria at the time, higher education was not really structured that way. You had to know what you wanted to study going in, and you couldn't change. And that was very restrictive for somebody like me who was undecided for a while.
Like almost every single person that age is. So I appreciate the open-ended education that we can sometimes have access to. Where did you go to school? Like where did you get into? Where did you move to once you came over?
Once I came over, I went to Wesleyan College in Macon, Georgia for 3 years. And then I transferred to Mount Holyoke College in Massachusetts. That's where I graduated from and got my bachelor's. And then I left for New York, where I got my MFA in Performing Arts Management from CUNY Brooklyn College.
So, how big of a difference is there between first setting foot in Western Europe versus Bulgaria and Macon, Georgia?
Oh my God. I
Seems like
just
that might have been
flew.
a wild ride for you there as a
Oh my God, it
newcomer
was
to
wild.
our
Yeah, well, it was let's see, I landed in Atlanta, right? At first, and the air, I mean, it just could knock me out flat on the ground because it was August. And it was so hot and humid, and it was like nothing like I had experienced before. But that was just the start of it. The culture shock was enormous for me because I was coming from this relatively big European city, even though Bulgarian city, but still there was a lot going on, and I could leave my apartment and go anywhere in town I wanted to. Not in Macon, Georgia. I was not a driver, so I was pretty much stuck to my campus, which was really tiny. And so I had a little bit of an adjusting to do, but overall the people were friendly and good. And so eventually I got used to it.
I can hardly hear your southern accent.
I know. I think I probably shook it by now, but let me tell you, when I moved to, I mean, New York or something, like people were telling me that I had a southern accent, and I was like, what?
Well, I guess if you, is that where you were really getting your first deep dive into English as a language that you had to speak? So maybe you, that's true.
I could have picked it up. It's totally possible.
Did you do any performing when you were in college there? Were you in a choir or band or anything like that?
Yeah, I did audition for their concert choir and I was a part of it for, honestly, I don't remember how long, for a little bit. So I was a part of that choir for a little while.
Why did you decide to do your fourth year up in Massachusetts?
I had to do 2 years up in Massachusetts
Oh.
because that was the minimum that the college required in order to give me a degree. I think that I wanted to experience the culture in the Northeast and just experience a different pace of life. So yeah, I was just exploring other possibilities, as I told you, the first several years. And that college, Mount Holyoke, was actually a college that I also initially applied to just when I was still in Bulgaria. I didn't get in right away, but I kept trying. So eventually they accepted me. So finally I transferred.
At what point did New York become your target?
New York became a target in my senior year of college.
What
Yeah.
was
Probably Probably in my second semester, so very like late.
What triggered that? What was the pivot?
Well, first semester of senior year, I took an acting class, and that changed my life. I decided I wanted to work in the theater, and I started taking class after class after class, and my professors said that if I wanted to work professionally in the theater, I have to be in New York because that's where it all happens. So that's where I went.
All right. Well, I've been waiting for theater and acting to come up somewhere, and it wasn't till the second semester of your senior year, but we got it. Okay. Well, we'll get to New York in a little bit, but let's do song number two now.
Sure. Are we playing it first,
That
or am I telling
is
the
totally
story
up to you. We
first?
can just leap right into it, or you can tell the story.
Let's leap right into it.
All right, this is Groove is in the Heart by D-Lite. There's three D or three E's there. From their album World Click, released in 1990. This is our guest today, Rada Angelova's second song on Three Song Stories. This is biography through music. Oh,
Oh,
I
yeah.
remember that song, but I've never listened to it in headphones before. That's something. So what's the story, or where does that take you?
That takes me to a really groovy summer, my first summer as a young adult without parents, going on vacation by the Bulgarian seaside with a bunch of friends. And it was a group of very artistic friends. They were all painters. And each year, as part of their education, they were taken to this beautiful town, very ancient, called Sozopol, to practice and develop their skills there. So they took me to Sozopol. It was my first time there, and I still go back to it every year. And oh, it was incredible, just experiencing a summer like that with friends like that. We didn't go to the regular beaches. They took me to the cliffs in town, from which you could jump directly into the deep sea. And then every night we would go out dancing to this beach bar called the Country Bar, which was just a wooden bar on the beach. And that was my favorite song. And we would just dance all night. Sometimes we would even welcome the sunrise. So I guess it was my first summer of growing up. I don't know if you could call it that, but truly unforgettable.
About how old were you?
Oh gosh, 16, 17, something like that.
And was this, your parents weren't around, so you were kind of independently partying and being.
Exactly.
When was the last time you listened to this song?
Well, in preparation for today, I was kind of like picking my brain, trying to pick my own brain, and just like I just listened to it in preparation, I guess, danced to it a little bit in the living room with my little daughter. We love dancing together, so it was just recently. But before, before that, I heard it about a month ago in a local club here in Sofia. So they still play it.
Well,
They still play it, and it still gets me every time.
it's got a great groove. It's kind of hard to, it's kind of timeless. I would consider it to be timeless.
It's very timeless.
You mentioned your daughter. How old's your daughter?
Yeah, two, just a little
Two,
over
a
two.
little over two. Okay, so not picking up on her own music yet. So let's go back then now to New York. You decide you fall in love with theater and you decide to move to New York. So what was your plan and how did it start?
So, my second semester of senior year, I already started writing, and I was seeing a lot of theater. Whatever shows would come to that part of Massachusetts. And I really got the bug for solo shows. And I started writing my own solo show, started writing on topics I was interested in. And eventually, I got this dream to produce my own solo show. So that was my plan. That was my goal for something that I wanted to do in New York. Obviously, gosh, I was really young. I was brand new still. You could still say I was brand new to the theater. I was doing a lot. And so I really didn't know how long I would last in a city like New York. So when I got there, I kept working on this show that I was writing. I continued taking acting classes. And then I was trying to find a job that could help me, support myself while I figure things out. And to make things more interesting, I also decided that I was going to apply for this program that I found, Performing Arts Management program in Brooklyn College. So that's what I was doing in my first year. But by the end of my first year in town, I was able to present my show at this summer theater festival, which accepted it. So that happened.
What was the show? What was it called? What was the basic gist of it?
The show is called When Silence Explodes, and it was structured like an orientation session into American life, designed to help international students get acquainted, get familiar and ready for what's to come. So it was an exploration of American life from the point of view of many different characters who were of a very diverse background, socioeconomic. I had foreigners, I had different races in there, Native Americans, African Americans. So everybody was talking about their experience, as they know it. Yeah, this was these were the themes that were interesting to me at that time. I was by then I had already been here for 5 years, but I was still discovering a lot of new things, and I was pretty blown away.
How often did you perform it, or was that just the one time?
No, I performed it several times as part of the festival. It was I can't remember, maybe 4 times. But in preparation for the festival, I was doing parts of it in different places. Like I did a part of it back in Mount Holyoke, and I did it in for a part of it for the Bulgarian community in New York. So it was really a year-long journey for me with multiple performances. Then one of the monologues was accepted at some kind of a competition in New Jersey, so I took part of that too. So it was like maybe up to 10 times, I would say. I performed it total.
So your bio says that you stepped behind the curtain to represent some musicals, and you just alluded to the fact that you started taking classes at Brooklyn College, I think you said. So tie those together. So you ended up doing more representation kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, well, after I produced my solo show at this theater festival, that was my first experience stepping also behind the curtain, because you also become your own producer.
Sure,
So I got to learn how about that whole world behind the scenes then. And then having produced this show, this really got the eye. This really was impressive for the head of the program, the Performing Arts Management program at Brooklyn College, that I really got to do that I really got to put the show on stage. And I think it really helped me to get accepted into that program, which is excellent. There, I continued to explore what else I could do in the theater because I didn't have another idea for a show. And so I just wanted to stay and work professionally in the theater. So I was trying all kinds of different things. I worked for a performing arts center in New York. Then I interned for a commercial Broadway producer. And then I met the head of the agency, which I eventually worked for a long time, in one of my classes. His name is Gary McAvey, and he was also a graduate of our program. And he introduced me to the world of booking agencies. He was the president of Columbia Artists Theatricals, which was a division of Columbia Artists Management. And I got really interested in the type of work and the kind of artists and attractions that they represent. So I started following the activity of the company. And when a possibility for an internship opened up, I applied and I stuck around.
How long did you stick around, and what were the kinds of things you wound up doing?
Well, I eventually became a booking agent representing Broadway musicals on tour. And let's see, probably with Gary and Columbia Artists Theatricals, I stayed for over 11 years. But I've also worked for another booking agency. But let's see, I started as an intern. So I was originally assisting the booking agents at the time. And I was also heavily working with the contracting head to help with that kind of work, issuing contracts and all of that. And then eventually, as they got confident in my abilities, I got other opportunities and I became an agent myself.
So how much of that job is knowing how to get all the paperwork and all the minutiae right, and how much of it is dealing with personalities and things like that of, the people who are on either end of all of those deals?
Well, let's see. When you're an agent, you are involved in the paperwork in terms of you have to know the terms of the deal and you sign off on the terms that are reflected in the contract. But then the contract itself is kind of turned over to the contracting department, so to speak. So you are supposed, you should know it, but your primary responsibility is really dealing with personalities and with all these theaters and promoters from all across the US and knowing how to get the job done because at the end of the day we work for the producers and so we work very hard to book a profitable tour, but we also want to kind of nurture our connections all across the country.
I bet you've worked with some real personalities.
Well, show business.
Yeah.
It's full of personality.
Absolutely. And you're a musician too, right? So, Rada and Subject to Change. Tell us about that.
Well, yes, I think that that early experience, well, first of all, experiencing music, in your body as a kid, dancing really young, and then becoming a singer. I think my connection to music is very strong, and I lost it for a little while. And then it kind of resurfaced very surprisingly to me in this desire to write songs. And I try to look back and I try to figure out how it happened. I was listening to a lot of great music because our team was representing Cats Chicago and just like these musicals with amazing music in it. So I was listening to a lot of that. And then I had continued writing, even though I wasn't writing for the stage anymore, but I think these two things came together, and that's how I got my first ideas for songs. And I decided to explore that and see if I could write a song. So that's how that started. And that's where subject to change comes from, actually, because I wanted to change the fact that I had lost my connection to music. So that's what I wanted to change, subject to change.
You've written and co-written with people. Any songs that you've written that have been wound up being recorded by, you know, somebody by besides yourself?
Let's see. I don't believe. Well, we did have a song that was recorded. I had a three-way co-write. Me and two other ladies, one of which was a very young girl. Like, she was maybe 13 or 14 at that time. And she did record that song, and I haven't heard that it's blown up globally yet, but I'll tell you if I do.
You know, I have, we have both your song Margarita and Anonymous in New York, and I was going to play a little bit of one, and I wondered which one you think we should play a little bit of.
Oh, my God. I couldn't pick between one or the other.
I'll flip a coin. I carry around a silver dollar. Okay, Jared, heads it's Margarita, and tails it's Anonymous in New York.
Oh, am I supposed to?
No, I'm flipping a coin. It's heads.
Okay, so
Margarita.
For doing that. I really appreciate it.
So, okay, well, when was the last time you listened to that? It's your own song.
Gosh, I listen to that frequently. I like that groove. I mean, I don't know if it's embarrassing to, like, listen to your own music. I don't think so. I just like the groove of that song. It's very, first of all, it reminds me of New York. That song was came about on a rooftop, which I love the New York rooftops. I love New rooftops anywhere, but the New York rooftops are something else. And it also reminds me of summer. So I like listening to that song.
It's got a nice little groove to it.
Yeah, it's fun.
So before we get to your third song, you've at least done some film. I see that on IMDb, Nothing Changed for Me, which you co-wrote with the guest who recommended you, Evgenia Radulova. What can you tell us about that project?
That's actually a video that Evgenia directed. That's a music video based on one of my songs called Nothing Changed for Me. Yeah, and I did co-write that song, but not with Evgenia. I co-wrote it with a Canadian artist.
Oh, I think IMDb has it wrong then. I think
It's possible. We've been trying to change some things on there for a while, and it's just incredibly
well,
hard.
Well, props to who is the Canadian that you co-wrote it with?
Her name is Eris.
Okay.
Also known as Sarah Bolton. Mm-hmm.
Oh, props to her. Well, how long ago was that, and how long you know, do you go back with Evgenia?
I met Evgenia in New York City. Wow, maybe about 10 years ago. It might actually be a little longer than 10 years ago. And sorry, what else did you ask me?
Oh, when was that music video produced?
Oh, yes. Well, the song was released in 2019, but I think we worked on that video in 2017, 2018.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
And finally, it got released in 2019. It was a really great experience, and I really appreciate the opportunity to work with her.
How long have you been back in Bulgaria?
About a year, a little over a year, maybe.
Mm-hmm. What made you decide to move back?
I was really, I think I had some nostalgic feelings in me, quite honestly. I was feeling those for a few years. And then COVID came about, and then my daughter came, and I thought that it was a good time to take a break from New York, from my work in the theater as I know it for the moment, and spend more time with family over here and also with my daughter. So,
Well, okay. Well, let's do your third song now. This is the song from Cats. How would you like to go?
let's play it.
Let's play it. All right. This is Memory from the musical Cats. Premiered in the New London Theater in 1981, then opened on Broadway the following year. It's Rada Angelova's third song today on Three Song Stories. We're going to play the original Broadway cast version.
Oh, wow. That takes me to my seat in NJ Park in Newark. And the first time I saw Cats live, and the first time I heard the music of Andrew Lloyd Webber live, and like my heart is like beating so fast right now. It was so emotional and beautiful. That's where it takes me. I was still, I don't know how long I had worked at Columbia Artists Theatrical by that time, but I was still relatively new, and I was supposed to know, of course, all of the shows on our roster. And all of my colleagues in the field, they grew up with the musical theater, most of them, but I didn't. And so that was very, very impressive and very, very moving. Yeah, I was still new to the world of musicals, and the w music of Andrew Lloyd Webber was just hypnotizing to me, absolutely hypnotizing.
How many different shows have you seen, would you guess?
Oh my God, do not know, but I've kept most of my tickets to all the shows I've seen in New York, and they are somewhere in a shoebox in one of the many boxes that made it from the US back to Bulgaria. I know it does not sound very appealing, but I could count. It's hundreds. And I need to take better care of those tickets and put them in a better place, but I have them.
Do you
I
have a
also keep a lot of my programs, a lot of my playbills.
favorite show?
I don't know if I have a favorite, but Cats is a special show to me, maybe for this reason that we are talking about today.
Did you watch the Cats movie that was
Did not.
kind of roundly panned? So you didn't even like give it a glimpse.
I did not see the movie.
Do you keep up with new theater that's coming out? I have a daughter who's a theater kid. She's getting ready to go away to college, and she's always on YouTube trying to see, anything she can of the new stuff as it rolls out.
I try to. It's I have to admit that I'm seeing a lot of new theater here in Bulgaria now. I kind of take a peek at what's going on Broadway and on tour, of course. But I'm really excited by what I'm seeing here. It's very different, and there are some American guest artists here that are also new to me. Like I saw the work of Robert Wilson here for the first time, American director Robert Wilson, who was invited at by our National Theater to work with collaborate with their team and produce The Tempest.
You said some of
And
those.
then of
Oh, go,
course,
go, go,
and then
go.
of course, there is a lot that goes on the scene by Bulgarian artists. Yeah.
You said that what's happening there is very different. Can you characterize like what that difference is?
Well, just the repertoire is very different. A lot of European writers, a lot of Russian writers as well, because that's just the history of theater here that influence is very strong. And of course, as I said, Robert Wilson as an artist is very, I mean, he's unique, right? So his aesthetic was very, it is not something that I'm accustomed to. I was accustomed to even in New York. So, and then there are a lot of Bulgarian adaptations for the stage of Bulgarian writers that did not necessarily write for the stage, but there are interesting teams of directors and writers who have formed here that make these adaptations. And I think that's very important because in that way, the work of these writers is introduced in a new way and to a new generation. And I think they're doing a really great job of doing that.
Cool. I'm glad I asked. Okay, are you ready for a speed round?
Well, ready or not.
Ready or not. Here we come. Radha, do you have a nickname that has stuck over the course of your life that you would be willing to share?
Actually, Radha is my nickname.
Oh.
My full name is Radoslava. And Radha, if I could tell this story, but my acting teachers always got so excited about this nickname because it's short for, it stands also for Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts. So I tell myself that I was meant to work in theater. I think that just, it's like all there in the nickname.
Your nickname is an acronym. That's great. When was the last time you purchased music that had physical form?
I don't remember. It's a shame.
No, that's okay. You're in the majority these days. Do you do karaoke?
No, not my thing. I prefer to write original music and sing my own songs.
That's okay. If you were a championship wrestler, what music would you come in on?
We Will Rock You.
What would your wrestler name be?
Rodimus Prime.
I absolutely love that.
I knew you were going to respond to that, Jared. Jared might be wearing a Transformers T-shirt right now.
There you go.
If you had to guess, what would you say is the song you've listened to the most times in your life?
That may very well be "Dancing and Prancing" by Danny Tenaglia.
I don't know that song, but I trust your judgment on that.
Can I now cut you off for 1 minute? Because I think my daughter and husband are at the door and they cannot go in.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, sure. Go ahead. We've only got a few more questions, but go ahead and let them in.
Hello?
Hello.
Okay, hopefully it doesn't get too noisy now.
No, we're really almost done.
Okay.
Song you wish you could hear again for the very first time?
Riders on the Storm by The Doors.
Album you wish you can hear for the very first time?
It's that one by Danny Tenaglia that, was it Experiment? I don't remember the name. Elements. It was called Elements.
I'll have to check that out as well.
Yeah.
What would you say is the most overplayed song of all time?
Overplayed. Is there such a thing as an overplayed song? I don't know. Hallelujah.
Well, I think you could also just have said what you said, in which is you don't think there's such a thing. Are there any songs you'll avoid listening to?
No. Not that I can think of right now.
If you could broadcast a song into the head of every person on the planet in one collective moment, which song would it be?
Disco Inferno.
I like that answer a lot.
Friends, and everybody would be on the dance floor and everybody would be friends.
Is there a best album of all time in your opinion?
can't think of one. No. I mean, it also depends on who you ask, and I don't think that I can pinpoint a best album.
That's a fair answer. That's an honest answer. Are there any bands or musicians that you have recently gotten into that you weren't even aware of maybe a few years ago?
Bands or musicians that I've gotten into, maybe some of the Bulgarian names I'm finding here on the local art scene. There is this interesting artist called Eva Yankulova. I find her work interesting.
Cool. What would your 14-year-old self think of who you are and what you're doing today?
I think she would think I'm doing some really cool things, unique. Yeah.
Okay. It is time for you to recommend three people that you'll share this with that you think we might be able to get.
Sure. I am recommending Gina DiDonato, who is a educator and actress. I am recommending Melissa Bell, a playwright and a good friend, and also Miss Arletha Williams, who is an author of a book.
Hmm. Where are they located?
They're all in the States, different parts of the States.
Okay.
Well,
we'll share this with them, and then we'll try to get them on, much as we did with you via Evgenia. Do you have any final thoughts you'd like to leave us and our listeners with?
Well, listen to music and dance a lot. It would make you feel better. And thank you for this invitation.
No, thank you for doing it.
My pleasure.
We make Three Song Stories in the studios of WGCU Public Radio on the campus of Florida Gulf Coast University in Fort Myers, Florida. Richard Chinqui is co-creator and producer. Tara Callaghan is online content producer and host. Our production assistant is Jared the Intern Gonzalez. Chris Duffus is executive producer. And our theme song was made by Dave Cowan and Stick Martin at Monkey House Studio in St. Pete. For this week's parting tune, we're jumping back 1 year to episode number 217 guest Apollo Fresh. He's a Southwest Florida-based nerdcore rapper who specializes in anime rap. Apollo's first song was Bigger Than Me by Big Sean from his album I Decided. He said in 2018 he was going through a very dark time with some mental health issues. He said music is normally his mental food, but at that point he just couldn't eat. But Big Sean's music made him feel safe and got him through those dark times.
I was like going through like a spiritual transformation, but I also was just not grounded at all, at all. So I would listen to music and I would get scared. Like it would literally be like any music. I couldn't listen to any music. It was wild. And it was like music was feeding me. And I was like, I didn't know what to do. But Big Sean's music is very like empowering and spiritual in some ways. It just felt really safe. But at the same time, it was motivating me because as I was going through this like transition, I became so aware of myself, even though in some ways I was disconnected. I was like, man, I know where I want to go from here. I know what I've been doing was not leading me where I want to go. And from here on, I'm changing the direction, the rudder on my ship, and I'm going to the top. And Big Sean music like helped facilitate that. That album had Bounce Back, like literally the titles, like Stick to the Plan. Like voices in my head, like just Sacrifices by Migos. Like you gotta make sacrifice. Like it was like a self-help book in a bumping album.
Keep listening.